You're listening to Rosemary Goes to the Mall, the saga of one woman's lonely journey around the Mall of America. First of all, those chocolate bonbons from Harry and David need to go in the trash immediately. I can't stop eating them. I can't believe it's like self-sabotage, really. It's like I could have bought something that either would have been useful around the house, you know, a condiment or something, but no, I get myself a bag of dark chocolate bonbons to sit in my refrigerator and torture me. Actually, they're not torturing me. I'm succumbing immediately to their temptation, and so there's absolutely no torture involved. It's really a problem, and as soon as I get home, they are going in the trash. Otherwise, I'm not doing too bad today. It is a beautiful day here in Minnesota after several weeks of nasty, wet, rainy weather. I do have a cold, which has gone from making me feel dreadful and tired to just making me completely congested and needing to blow my nose every 2 minutes. But, you know, all in all, I've felt worse, and it seems like the perfect day to spend at the mall shopping, as usual. Now, I'm driving up to the mall, and there is an area out front where I have to swing through, and this is the area where tour buses and things like that pull up and drop off, and taxis and things like that drop off their passengers. And this area is filled with an army of school buses, and there are thousands of young children getting out of these buses, pouring out. In fact, I have to wait at the crosswalk for 5 minutes while all of them meander across the street into the Mall of America. Now, call me old-fashioned, but since when did going to the Mall of America become an appropriate field trip for school children? I know they're there for the amusement park, but surely the teachers could have come up with something minutely more educational than going to the Mall of America for their young wards. It seems to me almost an abuse of trust that the parents have in them, that they are, you know, in some way expanding the minds and experiences of the young children they spend their days with. I mean, isn't there like a historical park or something, or an old log cabin somewhere that somebody famous built that they can go visit? I'm really having trouble getting over this. It's one thing for me, a depraved adult who has, you know, years and years of schooling behind her, to make the choice to spend my days at the Mall of America. But as a teacher, I would feel some responsibility to, you know, like improve the minds, expand the horizons of the kids who I was teaching. I find it shocking. In any case, when the wave of young children manages to get themselves across the road into the mall, I proceed and go and find a parking space. And it's been very crowded lately. When I first started coming here, it was pretty easy to find a parking space, and it's getting harder and harder. But I luck out today, which is good because I have that Jessica McClintock dress to return, among other things. And so I'm carrying a lot of stuff. So I luck out and I get a spot. I'm sort of diligent and I don't chicken out and go straight to the back rows. I actually stick with it, and I find a spot that's only two rows back and almost a direct shot straight to the doors of the West Wing. I don't return the watch today to the diamond store. I I had to fill out a form when I was checking out with, you know, my birthday, Keith's birthday, our anniversary. And I had lied and said that Keith's birthday was in May instead of in June. And I actually wrote 6 for the month first and then had to go, oops, and scratch it out. And I had to think fast because the guy was watching me and I put down May 20th, which is for his birthday, which is still a week away. And I feel like I have to wait until that date has passed to bring the watch back. But everything else goes back. I'm a little self-righteous at cachet because when I got the sweater home, I discovered that there were these little pulls in the knit. And so this gives me a good justification for bringing it back. That, you know, do I need to be self-righteous about it? Probably not. However, it does make me feel justified for once in bringing this back. But $188 sweater with pulls in the back? Whew, I could live without that. Now, as I'm doing all my returns, I notice that between H&M and Cachet, I walked right past it last time. I had kind of a mission last time that I was trying to fulfill. And I walked right past this entrance between the stores into the National American University. And I think that this is just fantastic that the Mall of America has a college in it. Not just a college, a university. So I wonder if they have bags in there, and I march back and ask for a catalog. And there's a guy sitting there who clearly has just filled out an application form. I have to say I feel a little guilty. It's kind of, you know, I mean, going to a university, quote unquote, that is within the Mall of America is something that I can freely mock because it's so ridiculous that someone would actually go to a school that was in the Mall of America. On the other hand, the guy sitting there, you know, waiting for his interview, his admissions interview, just looks like he's been through the ringer. I mean, he's probably late 40s, maybe older. He's clearly going to try and get some associate's degree to, you know, improve his circumstances. And God, I just feel like a privileged asshole standing here asking for a catalog. I say it's for my niece. And just take it and leave. And they clearly don't have any bags here. And while I do still think it's absolutely incredible that this exists in the mall of all places, I think that I'm going to get seriously bad karma by making fun of this place. Now, in the spirit of exploring all these places that are not quite retail that exist here, I go back, I get myself a locker, dump the catalog and the empty bags that I have from the returns, and I decide to make a visit to the River Church. And I just walk up, and they have a table there, and they've got free CDs for, you know, visitors. And I think, well, maybe I'll just nab a free CD. But then they also have some books and that are for sale. And one is on parenting and one is on, you know, just God, I guess. So those are for sale. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll buy one of these books and then I'll get a bag if they have one. And wouldn't it be great to have a bag that says the River Church on here? I mean, it would just add to my whole shtick here. And then this older guy stands up and starts talking to me and clearly engaging me. I don't think that they get too many visitors who aren't already part of the church. He's asking me if I have a church. He's super nice. I say that I just moved here, blah, blah, blah. You know, we talk. And then he turns out his son-in-law is the pastor. And so, as I pick up this parenting for real life book and sort of turn away from him a bit, he actually goes in back and gets his son-in-law who comes out and starts to talk to me, and he's super nice. And, it turns out he lived in New York for 6 months. He was working at this church in Queens near Shea Stadium. And he tells me this fantastic story about taking these high school kids who were in his ministry to Washington Square Park at like 11 o'clock at night and playing hide and seek with them in Washington Square Park. And he did this repeatedly. And the first time he did this, they had these mounted police, you know, police on horses, who stopped them, and they thought they were going to be in trouble. And then he explained that he was a pastor and these were high school kids and they were just playing hide and seek. And these cops thought it was so cool that he was doing this that they said, let us know whenever you're going to come and do this and we will help you out. And so every time they came at 11 o'clock and they'd play hide and seek until 1 o'clock in the morning. And these cops would stand guard in Washington Square Park for him and his kids. And so they would have this like raucous, crazy, fun game of hide and seek. And these mounted police would, like, if a shady character showed up in one part of the park, the police would come and warn him and his kids to be careful and stay away from over there. And then they would go and they would talk to the guy who was hanging out, who they considered shady. They sort of functioned as like guardians of the park for this guy and these kids. And I thought, what a fantastic thing. What a different kind of experience this guy created for himself in New York, just because he had different expectations of what could happen. I thought that was really fantastic. Anyway, I really enjoyed talking to him. I still feel wary. I don't want them to take my information or anything like that. So I still feel a little weird and I still want my bag. And I decide to get the Parenting for Real Life book, which costs $16. And it looks actually, you know, other than all the references to God, which I can't really connect to, it actually looks like a pretty good book. I'm not the type to use self-help books. A lot of this stuff, it makes a lot of sense though. So it's not like I'm going to use it, but it doesn't seem like total piece of garbage where, you know, if it was all about Jesus and trying to sell me on some real born again stuff, I would not be able to deal with it because I just don't believe in it. But for some reason, this book seems like a kind of a positive thing out there in the world. So I decide to buy that. I ask if they take credit cards, and it turns out they don't. He says they're not set up as a store, although they would like to become a Christian bookstore. They are set up as an office for their church, which meets in the ballroom, apparently, at the mall. And so they sell these books very much on a low profile kind of way. And they can either take cash or checks. They don't charge tax. They just take the money, write down the sale, don't even ask me my name, and they have no bags. So I can't quite believe that I just bought this book and I'm kind of stuck with it. Because what am I going to do? Go back and say, oh, no, this book is no good. I mean, they only sell two books in the entire place. And I've just had this whole interaction with the pastor. So it looks like I'm stuck with this book. And it's not that it's a bad book. It's just that I don't really want it. And I got no bag to boot. But then he says, well, we should have some bags. We should have Janet make up some bags with our name on it. Wouldn't that be great? And so I seem to spark an idea for them, about, you know, a way to grow or some, you know, like a new aspect that they could develop in a kind of a weird marketing way. Since I have no bags, I returned to my locker and I put the book in the locker with the bags that I had used to return all the stuff and also the catalog for National American University. And I'm really excited to move on to the South Wing today. But before I can do that, I need to take care of one final little thing, which is going to Abercrombie and making a purchase there so I can get one of their bags. And of course, after my little Abercrombie debacle a couple of visits ago, I've left a little bit of time so that they won't remember me. But I just march in. I make up this fantasy in my head about a teenage niece. Maybe it's the same niece who wants to go to National American University and get her associate's degree in business administration. But in any case, she's petite, it turns out, and I just grab a couple of t-shirts that are small and also a small size white sweatshirt. I have to say that once again, I am kind of shocked by the place. Abercrombie & Fitch, of course, has these incredibly sexual ads. And it's not that they have big pictures of incredibly sexualized young girls, but the clothes themselves are pretty sexy for the age of girl that's shopping there. I find it a little questionable. The shirts, you know, they'll have like an Oxford shirt, not an Oxford, like a t-shirt with buttons down, and the buttons will go all the way down almost past where your breasts are. So they are totally encouraging young girls to be super sexy in this very adult way. I find it pretty uncomfortable. Clearly the other moms that are in the store shopping for their daughters don't find it so uncomfortable. They clearly have no problem with it at all. I, however, as kind of a tourist in this world, find it really weird. And it makes me happy once again that I don't have girls, because I just don't know if I could handle the stress of those pressures on my daughter. You know, it's, boys don't have quite the same kind of thing. And Abercrombie seems to just really symbolize this kind of cultural weirdness that we have about preteen and teen girls being older than they should be. Like, why can't they just be kids for a while? It's kind of too bad. Once I've made that purchase, I am free of the West Wing because I have shopped at every single store there. Now I make my way down to the first floor because I figure I'll start on the first floor in the South Wing and make my way up, over, and then down again the way I did in the West Wing. And the first store I encounter, which is right across from Macy's, is K Jewelers. So lucky me, another jewelers to go to. I'm getting less intimidated by them, which is good. And I just grin and bear it. I figure, let's just get it over with. Okay, I'm not saving this one for the end. I'm just going to do it right now. I go up and I decide that, you know, once again, I really just don't like any of this stuff. I do look at the men's watches, but as I still have a men's watch from last time, I'm not anxious to buy another one. So I decide that I'm going to shop for my mother's birthday present. And I start looking at K Jewelers. Really, K Jewelers is kind of at the bottom rung of jewelers if you're looking for how classy a place is. This probably falls pretty low on the totem pole of jewelry stores. It's just, I think it's got kind of a cheesy reputation and so the stuff that's in there is not very appealing. I find a pair of little glass heart bobbly earrings that I could buy. Then they've got this section which is just pearls and diamonds, and I think, well, I could get a pair of pearl earrings, you know, just regular little pearls. Or actually, interestingly enough, some of the diamond earrings are not so expensive, especially if you're into the quarter carat and below territory. I think it's kind of funny to think about buying diamond earrings because I was so freaked out by having to buy diamonds the other day. And so in some ways I feel like it's a bit of a challenge that it would be kind of cool to buy diamonds. So I think I'm going to do it. I pick out a pair of quarter carat diamond earrings. They cost $199. And the guy's very excited. I mean, it's not like, you know, the $1,500 diamond earrings, but it's something. And so we get it all wrapped up, and I, you know, verify that if my mother already has a pair of diamond earrings, I can return them. And he takes my credit card and the earrings back, works up the charge, and he calls over and says, I'm going to throw a little extra something in there too, a little special gift. And I can't quite imagine what this is going to be. He says, you can either give it to her or you can keep it for yourself. And so I'm kind of intrigued, and I wonder what this is going to be. He asks me if I want the earrings wrapped since they're a gift, and I manage to control myself this time and I say no, that I will wrap them myself. So I'm feeling very proud of myself that I managed to control myself and not create work for this poor sucker who is being manipulated by me, and, you know, not make the situation worse. So he puts the diamond earrings into a little K jeweler's bag with a little poof of black tissue paper. You know, when you really think about this, the amount of packaging, I mean, I know that I'm trying to collect all these bags, but not just the bags. I mean, the bags are intense. You know, you have this tiny little piece of clothing and then this huge heavy paper bag with like ribbon handles. But not only that, but the tissue paper that is used to wrap things, completely unnecessary from an environmental point of view. I am in my own way contributing to the destruction of the planet through this project, and I can appreciate that I also am implicated in this. However, I just find it kind of shocking repeatedly that we require so much wrapping and crap like that. Then he takes my little extra special gift, which turns out to be quite big, and it's in a plastic bag, and I can't quite see what it is. And he puts that in a plastic K jeweler's bag and brings that over. And when he brings it over, I take a peek, and it turns out to be a teddy bear. And I pull it out a little bit, and this teddy bear is holding on to a little gift box with little cloth roses on the top. And you can take your gift box with the diamond earrings in it, and you can put it inside this box that the teddy bear is holding on to. It's kind of odd because I don't think that I would give my mother, well, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't give my mother diamond earrings. Let's, you know, be serious. But I certainly wouldn't give her diamond earrings in like a teddy bear's gift box. But what's even funnier is I think that this is probably typical of, you know, men buy something really nice for their wives or girlfriends and they give it to them in this teddy bear thing. But if Keith gave something like this to me, I would laugh so hard I wouldn't even remember to open it up and see what was inside. Like the thought of Keith buying me a teddy bear or giving me something that was so cute would just defy everything I know about him. and me and us. It's just that this somehow typifies our expectations of what romance is between two people just really stuns me. You see it all the time. You see that expectation all the time. I have never before actually been in possession of anything like that. Well, so it goes. That's there it is. Romance in America, right there. Now, right on the corner of the Macy's Courtyard is a funny store called White House Black Market. And it's the white and the black words are in really big block text, and they have a line between them. So it's White House Black Market. So it also just looks like white black with little text underneath it. And all the clothing in this store is, you've got it, white and black, or white or black. It's kind of appealing, actually. You see so much crap, and this is actually pretty nice clothing, and they've got this really cute sleeveless dress, and I'm thinking that maybe this is the thing to get there, is to go find that dress and try it on and buy that, because, while I don't think the lady with the Prada sunglasses would buy this dress, but maybe she would, maybe for like a really fabulous garden cocktail party in the Hamptons, she would buy this. It certainly would go well with those strappy black sandals that I really hated at Macy's. And it's super fabulous. I mean, I really think this dress is hot. It's funny because while yesterday I really pursued the idea of the lady with the Prada sunglasses, I wasn't all that successful, really, and I haven't been. And the power of the lady with the Prada sunglasses is starting to fade a bit. I'm no longer really pining for those sunglasses. But you know what I am pining for today are those Puma sneakers that I returned. It took me ages to return them because I really wanted them. And then I looked at them and I thought, well, these are silly. These are frivolous. Today I am mourning a bit for that frivolity, for that, you know, that shit. I'm just going to wear purple satin Pumas. That's how frivolous I am. They're completely useless shoes, but I think they're cute and I'm just going to wear them. So, and also the Pumas feel a little bit more like me than the Prada sunglasses. You know, it's slightly more, it's closer to really what might be. That Prada sunglasses, that person, you know, I don't have that kind of money. I'm not from that kind of background. You know, I might have grown into it if I had been a truly fabulous person. Instead, it turns out that I'm just more of an average person. But the Puma sneakers, I can pull that kind of thing off. I can't really pull the sunglasses off long term, but I could pull off those sneakers. Anyway, that is neither here nor there. At the moment, I'm in White House Black Market. I'm still pondering that name a little bit. White House Black Market. When they say White House, do they mean the White House? Or do they mean White House as in white picket fence type White House, like, you know, perfect peaceful domesticity kind of White House? And then Black Market, I mean, are they talking about the Black Market as in, like, you know, we're going to sell something on the black market, or, you know, like drugs? Or, I mean, it's kind of weird, especially for this kind of hoity-toity clothing store. Or do they mean like the black sophisticated, this kind of clothing you would wear to be out on the market, on the town? Maybe that's what it is. It's like super domestic and super sophisticated out in the public world kind of clothing. All in all, whoever named this store is bizarre. I mean, that person needs to get their head checked, because if you really analyze this name, it doesn't make any sense at all. Nonetheless, back to that really cute dress that is in the window of the store. I march back to the back and find it immediately and start rifling through them to try and find a size 10 or 12. And they don't have any. They have size 0, they have size 4, they have size 6. They even have size 8, but I would never fit into a size 8 dress. I might fit into size 8 jeans, but not size 8 dress. I am simply too well endowed up top, if you know what I mean, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, to ever fit into anything below a large or a 12 or 14 in the blouse department. So dresses, I have some problems with them, I have to admit, because I am a little bit uneven. I'm working on the bottom half with the chocolate bonbons to try to even things out. But as it stands, I'm still a size 10 or below in jeans and pants, usually, and skirts. In any case, I ask them if they have any more of this dress in back, and they check and they don't. And then I look at some other black and white dresses, and they're all size 4 and size 0. So I'm kind of getting pissed off here because, you know, many of us on this planet are not that small. And it just kind of pisses me off that they only have dresses in sizes for super, super skinny people. I decide that I have to start to explore the rest of the store in order to purchase something here. But I like this idea of this cocktail, Hamptons cocktail party dress. So I find this really cute white and black skirt. It's a white skirt with black designs, really graphic, really cute, really summery. And I think that it's like an A-line skirt. I think that this could be a really nice addition to my wardrobe. And then they have all these black sleeveless blouses that go with it. And I pick out a couple to try on as well. I try them on, and the blouse that I had picked out looks terrible with it. But then the sales girl had suggested a different one, which has this really nice scoop turtlenecky type thing. And I try that on, and it's very slimming, which is always nice. And I don't look like me at all, but I feel fabulous. And I think that this is the perfect cocktail party dress for my summer in the Hamptons. So I'm going to go ahead and buy it. And I'm thinking as I'm checking out here with my $186 purchase, how comfortable I'm getting spending money. I have been at it for only, you know, maybe half an hour. This is my third store, and I have spent $78.50 at Abercrombie. I spent $213 at Kay Jewelers on diamond earrings, and now I'm spending $186 on a cocktail outfit. That is phenomenal to me, because the first day I started this, if anything was over $20, I felt like crawling out of my own skin. It just made me so uncomfortable. But the more you shop, the more comfortable you get with it. And I really feel strangely free. I mean, nothing bad has happened to me so far, even though I'm just buying, returning, buying, returning, buying, returning. Nothing bad has happened to me. So why not just go for it? I don't have to buy the cheapest thing in the store. I can live a little bit and fantasize a little bit. And it's kind of fun. This new feeling I have about spending money gets sorely tested in Local Charm, a Minnesota jewelry studio. This store is filled with pretty nice jewelry designed by local artisans. None of it really rocks my world. I'm, you know, there's some nice things. I think, well, I could buy something for my mother for her birthday, or I could buy something for myself. And so I say to the sales girl, I'm buying jewelry to match a dress that isn't here. So if I'm not happy with it, can I return it? And she says, it's only for exchange or store credit. So fooey on me. I think that I'm screwed here. Nothing in the store is below $40. And I just honestly can say that I don't want any of it all that much. I don't even really want to buy any of it for my mother, even though I know she loves earrings. I just don't think that it's all that special. And, you know, a lot of it's very nice. And if I had $1 million, I'd be happy to own some of it. But none of it really rocks my boat. Look at some of the handbags, and some of them are kind of cute, but again, you know, I need a handbag? Not really, especially not a really foofy one. What's interesting about this store, though, because I'm clearly in a dilemma, is that none of it is locked. You can actually, unlike any of the other jewelry stores I've been in, you can actually pull open the cases yourself and try things on freely. They don't require a salesperson to open it up for you. And I dig this. I really love the fact that they let you do this. And it just makes shopping an easier experience that they have this open case policy. I guess I hear her tell another customer that a couple of the gold jewelry cases are closed, because I guess that's worth a lot more money. But the silver ones are open. I'm really at a loss as to what to do here, and I'm flailing around. The fact that this stuff is not returnable has really messed up my plans a little bit. So I keep wandering, and then I come across this one case which has these pendants and earrings and rings that have this blue and white porcelain inset into silver. The sales girl walks by and says, aren't those pretty? Those are all made from Chinese porcelain. So this jeweler has taken Chinese porcelains that are blue and white, and she or he has cut them out into these little designs and inset them into silver. And I am really taken with these things. There's one that I try on that is kind of a big square, and it's a little big, and it's on a 16-inch silver chain, but it's really, really pretty. But I think, well, maybe there's a smaller one, because this one costs about $80. So I go back to the case, and the sales girl says, and just to let you know, The prices are for the pendants only, and then you can have them on any size chain you want. So that's a 16-inch silver chain, but you can have yours on any size chain. And I said, oh, so that price is only for the pendant? And she said, yeah, but you know what? A silver chain that size is only about $13. So that's not really, you know, a huge addition in price. I'm a little disconcerted by this, because now we have just upped the ante even more. But I go back and I look at some of the other pendants, and I pick out about four and put them in my hand, and none of these are on chains. I go back over to the mirror and I try them against my collarbones, you know, about where the other one hit. And I fall in love with one of them, and it's this little oval pendant, and the blue, it's white with a blue design, and it's this kind of repetitive circular design. And you know, I am not a person who ever has worn very much jewelry. I wear silver hoops in my ears, very small ones that I never have to take out. I just sleep in them, and a wedding ring. And occasionally when I'm getting dressed up, I have a silver chain that I wear around my neck. That's it. And so this is possibly one of the first pieces of jewelry that I've actually really loved. I really love it. I can imagine myself wearing it and really feeling special in it. This love I'm feeling for this pendant throws me into a total dilemma because the pendant costs $59 and a chain will probably cost $13. So we're up to about a $75 purchase. And it's not returnable. And so it'd be one thing to buy this and it would be like, oh, what a fantasy to own this beautiful necklace if I were another person. But I really would own it. I mean, I would own it for good. But the other options aren't very good either. I could get a pair of $40 earrings that I don't like and be stuck with them. Or I could spend almost $80 and really love this piece of jewelry. I don't know what to do. I feel like I can't justify an $80 purchase on something like that. If it was $80 in groceries or $80 in art supplies or $80 in kids' clothes or even $80 worth of really inexpensive bargains for myself, that would be one thing. I could totally justify that. I mean, everybody needs clothes. Everybody needs a decent pair of shoes. I need my art supplies or whatever passes as art supplies for me, which is not, you know, like paint. Usually it's pretty random stuff. But $80 on a necklace, I just don't know what to do. But I want it. I really, really love it. I am starting to hyperventilate a little bit. I'm feeling very stressed out by this. So I pick up my bags and I leave. And I say to the sales girl as I'm walking out, I'm going to think about it and come back. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to think about it and figure out what to do because I'm not sure. I flee directly into Benetton, which is another store from my childhood. I used to love Benetton when I was a teenager and tween, as they say now. At that point, which must have been the early 80s, Benetton was kind of European, and they sold these kind of blocky sweaters, chunky sweaters with, you know, big knit and super cropped and stylish pants. And, you know, I thought it was really cool. I usually didn't have enough money to shop there, but I did occasionally acquire a Benetton item and felt pretty darn cool about it. I think Benetton went through a few years where it lost its identity. It didn't make clothes that anyone really wanted particularly. And I think it's trying to come back from that. And I definitely get kind of a fresh, stylish feel from the store. There's lots of nice clothes in here, none of which I really want. And I kind of feel like I used up my clothes patience in White House Black Market, especially after such an expensive purchase. So I gravitate towards the handbags. There's a few that are all right, and there's one that I think is really cute. It's long and rectangular, and it's got this really pretty Indian looking, like Asia Indian looking embroidered sides with pink and blue, and then these gold embroidery with beads and all this stuff. It reminds me a little bit of this tapestry that Keith got in India that we've always had hanging in the house. I'm not sure if we have it hanging in our Minnesota house, but we certainly always had it up in New York and in Boston before that, once we came back to the U.S. from Japan. And this kind of reminds me of that. So I figure I'll get this. I do continue to look around and see this blouse, which is really pretty. It's kind of sheer and has this blue and pink floral design on it. And I grab it off the rack, and the sales lady says to me, "Those run a little small, so make sure you get a size up." Of course, I've grabbed the only large off the rack already, and there's certainly no extra larges in Benetton, which I remember from when I was a kid that all their clothes always seemed really small. So I say, well, I've got a large, and we'll see if that fits. And I go into the dressing room, and I try to squeeze into this shirt, a large shirt. I mean, come on. Give us larger girls some room, you know? I mean, I can barely get this thing over my head. I squeeze into it, squeeze it over my bosom, and I sit there and think, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. So I squeeze myself out of it and take it off and return it to the rack. Clearly not a day for me to buy a blouse from Benetton. I'm just going to stick with the bag and go with that. While I'm checking out, I'm just looking at the sales lady, and it's kind of funny. She's very tall, but it strikes me that she has, although she's very done up, you know, and her hair is slicked back and she's got real sexy clothing on, she has a slightly masculine look to her. She just is on that edge where, you know, occasionally you see women. In New York, I used to see women on the subway, and they would strike me as a woman, but just slightly off. Like maybe their wrists were too big, or they had too big an Adam's apple or something. And there's not even anything quite that obvious here, but there's just that slight hint of masculinity. And I have this moment where I wonder if she is or was a man. It's a bizarre moment. And I'm kind of embarrassed that I even think it, because, I mean, if she isn't, how terrible that I think that. Really, yeah, no, I'm going to try to forget I even said that. I feel bad for her now. In Gymboree, I managed to momentarily escape the pressure of having to shop for myself. It's a wonderful feeling to see that they have their knit shorts for kids on sale for $8 a pair. I grab three or four pairs, a couple for Garrett, a couple for Evan. And then it turns out they have some other really cute shorts there too. And the kids are really desperately in need of some more shorts. We don't have enough to make it through, you know, a few days without washing more. So I just buy some more. There's a few other pairs, and they're $16.50 a pair, which is not quite the deal that the knit shorts are. However, they're really cute, and I think they're going to fit well. So I just decide to buy a whole bunch of them. We have billions of t-shirts, particularly for Garrett, so I don't bother with the t-shirts. And once I've grabbed about eight pairs, I figure this is going to be a pretty expensive visit to Gymboree, so I just cut my losses and go up to the register and purchase them. These obviously I'm going to keep, unless those $16.50 pairs don't fit very well. We'll try them on and see how they are. They seem a little pricey to me, but if they fit and they're good and they wear well, then they're worth keeping. Nine West is a store which I have to say there were years where I would only buy shoes from Nine West, but that time has passed. I did find a really nice pair of heels there last year, right before my job interview in Minnesota. I found a pair of really comfortable, light brown high heels that were very low. And actually, Krista had a pair, and that's why I knew that they had them. And I always thought they were really nice. And then Nicole ended up going and buying two pairs, you know, different colors. They're that great. I mean, they're really, really wearable. If I ever wore high heels, other than on job interviews, I would wear these all the time because they're super comfortable. They don't kill your feet after wearing them, you know, all day. Well, they kill your feet a little bit, but it's not as bad as a lot of high heels where basically I would be a cripple by the end of the day. I managed to wear them all day at my job interview and not, you know, not fall over, not have to hobble because I had gigantic blisters. Nonetheless, Nine West is not my favorite shoe store anymore. I think that their design has really been going downhill. For me, they always functioned as a pretty fashionable, pretty inexpensive shoe store where I could find reliable shoes that looked good but wouldn't break the bank. Now, they've gotten into this really chintzy-looking, pretty ugly line of shoes with lots of gold lamé. And they definitely seem to be going for a younger look, but also a trashier look. I don't know if they're trying to, like maybe Aldo has taken over the cool shoe market, so they're going for the trashy shoe market. Either way, I walk through Nine West and I don't see a whole hell of a lot that I want. There's one pair on the super sale rack where, you know, they're mules and they're kind of cute. They're this brown leather design. And I ask if they have those in size 10s and they tell me that whatever's on there is the last pair they have. And I turn it over and it's a size 9. So that's a no-go. I head back over towards the sandals thinking that maybe I can recreate my Mia sandal experience and find a pair of super sexy sandals that, you know, I can, you know, fantasize about being someone else, by wearing and purchasing, but that's not happening. And I do find these, sandals that are slightly dressier, and I could use a pair of slightly dressier sandals. They have them in black and brown, and I asked the sales girl to try them in brown if they have them. And while she goes and gets those, I discover they have them also with a brown sole and a blue suede upper. And these are a little cooler. So when she comes back, I ask her to find those in size 10 too. You know, sandals are a funny thing for me. I need them, obviously. It gets to be summertime and it gets hot and you can't wear sneakers or, you know, shoes and socks all summer long. You really need to have sandals. Your feet need to breathe at least a few months of the year. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, my feet are not my most attractive feature. They're... No, you know, you could really ask anyone to look at my feet and compare them to really attractive feet, and they would probably say the same thing. You know, like, Rosemary, focus on your hair, or, you know, whatever. My feet, of course, have been encased in socks and shoes all morning. By the time I take them off, they're looking, you know, just like they haven't seen sun all winter, really. And they're a little swollen looking from me walking around, and they're white and pasty looking. And I have only ever had one pedicure in my life. I was cajoled into it by my friend Yumi, and I've never been back. Not that I didn't enjoy it. I just felt weird having my toenails painted a different color. So clearly I have some issues that I need to resolve about my feet. And maybe if I took better care of them, they would be a better feature. But the long and short of it is I take off my socks and my shoes and I put on these sandals and my my feet are just ugly. I'm almost embarrassed for the sales girl to see them. I try to walk away from her so she can't see how yucky they look. And, I like the blue sandals. They're cooler than the other ones. They're not that cool, but they're cooler. So I just decide to buy them and put my socks and shoes back on so I can get out of here. When I walked into Nine West, I was looking at the next door, wondering what in hell this place is. It's called Love Sack. When I come out after buying my sandals, I realize that it's a beanbag store. Clearly, I'm not going to buy a beanbag today. Beanbag chair. But they also have these fuzzy covered sectional couches, which is really hilarious. Clearly, I'm not going to buy that either. But they have a bunch of pillows, and they seem pretty inexpensive, particularly these little round sausage-shaped pillows. And I'm not really sure what they're for. Maybe it's like a back thing. But I just grab one off the shelf and purchase that. And I have to say, the bag that they put it in is rockin'. In no paper or plastic here. This is one of these, it's almost like woven. It's fabric, but I don't know. It's not cotton or anything. Anyway, it's a really cool bag, and I almost feel guilty keeping it. It's that nice. But of course I will, because that's the whole point. But I feel like I've really scored on this $15 purchase to get that nice a bag. It's really great. At this point, I'm starting to lose it a little bit. I don't know what it is today. I think that the local charm experience freaked me out a little bit about what I'm doing and how much money I could potentially spend just for myself. Keith calls me just to check in, and I tell him, I don't tell him about the diamond earrings because I feel like he would just freak out. But I do tell him about the pendant at Local Charm, and he basically says, I should learn to stop calling you while you're doing this because it just totally stresses me out. So I guess that's that. He also says to me that it's funny, but he feels like, in a way, my doing this is a little bit like my being on A Price is Right. Like, maybe it's a way to kind of finagle stuff for himself. And he's struggling with that too, because he doesn't want to waste money on himself, kind of the way I don't want to waste money on myself. But then I think there's also some jealousy there that I am getting stuff for myself and he's not. It's clearly a very complicated situation here. Two people with enough money to be happy, but not enough money to have a lot of stuff, struggling with the idea of materialism, really. It's not easy. Definitely not easy. In any case, I'm starting to hit a wall here. I'm almost at the end of this side of this part of the first floor. And what's ahead of me is Baby Gap and Gap Kids. And I figure I'll just go boom, boom and finish that, and that'll be that. And although I wanted to finish this whole section of this side of the South Wing, that's not going to happen because I'm carrying like 15,000 bags at this point and I'm really dead tired. I go into Baby Gap and I'm looking for a present for Dina, who just had a little girl. And I just don't like anything. I pull off one thing and then it doesn't have the thing that matches it in the right size. And I'm really struggling. I finally say, screw it. I'll just buy something. It'll be ugly. I'll return it. I'll find a baby present somewhere else. And I grab this duck towel, you know, the kind of towel they have for kids with a little triangular thing where they can stick on their heads. So it, it goes over their heads and then they can wrap, you know, the rest of it around their bodies. I grab one of those and bring it up. She asks if it's a gift. I say yes. And she asks me if I want it gift wrapped. And once again, before I can get myself under control, I say yes. So once again, I have to suffer through watching this woman gift wrap it, which takes forever and holds up the entire line because I'm a completely selfish human being and am manipulating people and lying to them. And what's really funny about this whole thing is that the gift box and the bag she gives me, well, it's funny. Baby Gap has clearly gone for a new design of their stuff, and it's this striped interior with pink and blue and purple and cream colored stripes, and then a dark brown exterior. Now, I'm sorry, but since when was dark brown a baby color? I'm kind of surprised by their color choices. It doesn't seem quite right to me. It seems a little dark for baby stuff. Like maybe they need to talk to their marketing people. It would be stylish in like a women's clothing store, but Baby Gap, it seems really odd. In any case, I don't really like this towel. I feel like I'm going to have to return it, and I'm feeling very self-conscious about having bought it because I've, you know, let her go through the whole thing of wrapping it up. And so I feel really stupid. I jet into Gap Kids, which is right next door, and grab a pair of size 5 slim jeans for Evan and a package of underpants, all of which I intend to return because I just simply never buy my kids' clothes full price. It's just way too expensive. Although I am kind of intrigued by the idea that there are slim pants out there for Evan because he definitely needs them. We can't keep any pants up on him. He's way too skinny. Anyway, I just rushed these to the front, purchased them. I'm hoping for a good Gap Kids bag, but what I get is just a regular Gap bag. And well, that's fine. That'll do. I'm at the end of the line. I don't really feel like I've done enough. But I'm really pooped. And then I see that I'm right outside of Lego World, which is this crazy place, which drives small children insane, where they have huge sculptures and statues all built out of Legos. It's right at the entrance into the amusement park. It has these high atrium ceilings and, you know, it's not like a store like all these other stores. It's really out in the open. And they sell Legos in bins, you know, bulk. And they also sell all of these kits as well. Evan is a complete and utter Lego fanatic. And I immediately come across this Batman series of Lego kits. And if Evan is a Lego fanatic, he's not even half as much of a Lego fanatic as he is a Batman fanatic. So bringing the two of these together into one item is just like complete and utter, it's like every fantasy fulfilled for Evan. All of these Batman things are labeled with a new symbol. And the bigger ones, they have this really crazy, like, bat cave kind of thing, a huge kit that costs $80 or $90. And those all say, new item, one per customer. And I have this really funny moment where I envision all these people trying to hoard all the new Lego items. Like, maybe there are Lego fanatics even beyond Evan out there. Maybe there are adults who are Lego fanatics too. And this is like some culty weird thing. So they have to limit it one per customer. So they make sure that everybody who wants one can have one. To me, it's totally nuts. And clearly I'm not going to spend $90 on one of these things. And even buying this and returning it makes me feel bad because I know that Evan would love it. But maybe this is the kind of thing that that we could get him the next time there's an event, you know, Christmas or birthday or whatever. I decide on this thing, which is like a bat boat, and it also has this little interior bat jet ski type thing that comes out of it, and there's a little Lego Batman who can either sit in the bat boat or on the little bat jet ski, and there's another jet ski type thing which has the bad guy, and I'm not sure exactly who the bad guy is, except he's green and he has a big machine gun. Evan would lose his shit over this, and I would certainly love to give it to him, but the rule is I'm going to bring it back, but I'll keep it in mind for future gifts for him because this is totally perfect. I'm thinking that I'm done, but I'm also feeling kind of bad. And I feel like it's going to take way too long to get through all the stores on this side of the mall if I keep up this pace. I mean, I got a little distracted with like the trying things on, and then the whole local charm thing really threw me off. But really, I mean, I have to move faster than this. So I'm going to do one more store just to top it off. Then I will at least have made a dent in that other side. And so when I come back next time, I won't feel quite so discouraged. So I walk out of Lego Discovery World or whatever it's called, and I go directly across the way and go into the Discovery Channel store. And I am just looking to get something really fast and get out. I mean, there's telescopes, there's all kinds of stuff that I think, wow, like Evan would dig this, and Keith would dig this, and Garrett will eventually dig this. But I can't dilly-dally over the telescopes and things today. So I'm wandering back, I'm looking at the stacks, and then I come across what I think is probably the perfect thing to get. And it is a puzzle and a game called Art Fraud. And it is a picture of Mona Lisa, and it's a 1,000-piece puzzle. So you put together the 1,000 pieces of the puzzle, and the picture is different from the original Mona Lisa in a number of subtle ways. And you have to figure out how this picture is actually different than the original. And they give you a hint, and that is that her eyes are a different color in the puzzle than they are in the original. And as much as doing a 1,000-piece puzzle and then figuring all these things out doesn't really intrigue me, I do think that ending the day today with the purchase of a game called Art Fraud is pretty perfect and somehow puts like a great kind of cherry on the sundae in terms of what I'm doing here at the mall. And I think I'm going to leave it at that. I think that this is a sign that I should stop, that, that I found what I need to find today, and that tomorrow will be a new day.